So I'll be talking about some of the work that the City of Onkaringa is doing around biodiversity and climate change, and try and draw out some issues that are relevant for the local government sector. So a bit about the City of Onkaringa. So we're a southern metropolitan council, so we effectively pick up the southern urban rural fringe. Within that, within our city, about 9% of the existing rim, there's about 9% coverage of remnant native vegetation, and much of that's fragmented. The big parcels are located within the southern Mount Lofty ranges, and they're primarily in state government and private ownership. Having said that, council though does control and manage some significant areas of remnant native vegetation. We actively manage about 480 hectares across 48 main sites. In addition to that, there's about 100 kilometres of roadside remnant native vegetation that we actively manage. I guess some of the issues for us in managing those areas, and this would be applicable across other councils, is that by and large they're small isolated pockets. They're often linear in shape, so there's big edge issues associated with the management. We have relatively few areas that we could say are dedicated solely for conservation purposes. Generally, there's a range of uses, whether it's road, drainage reserve. And in a lot of cases, there's close proximity to dwellings and other assets, and that's particularly an issue since the Victorian bushfires. So what are the roles for councils, local government broadly, in biodiversity conservation? So there's a clear leadership role for councils in terms of identifying strategic issues relevant to their local area. As I've touched on, there's also a big role for councils as owners and managers of remnant native vegetation. Councils are also regulators, so they've got they're a local planning authority, and there's a clear role there in terms of protecting biodiversity assets. And this is probably the main way that local government can influence conservation on private land. We also have a role as information provider, both providing information to our communities and information up to other levels of government. Touching on that, we can also advocate to other levels of government on issues, and for particularly around funding. And we're a part funder, so cooperate with other agencies. And I'll touch upon that, talk about that a bit further. Just before I go on, I think it's worth mentioning that those roles that I mentioned, I think they're applicable across all local government. And while they haven't changed, I think that within the City of Onkaringa, we've certainly seen some changes in emphasis within those roles over the last 15 years or so. Certainly 15 years ago, protection of native vegetation and council's role in biodiversity conservation was really an emerging issue. And the emphasis was clearly on understanding, identification of what areas of remnants we owned, mapping those areas. From then, the emphasis shifted on to ensuring that council itself protected those areas, and they were mainly a threat through council's own operations, so activities like parks and reserves maintenance, road construction. And that involves putting staff training, obviously, putting in place a lot of policy and procedures. Once those areas are protected from external impacts, the emphasis then becomes on actively managing those areas. But our emphasis has been on getting our own house in order in terms of the way we manage remnant native vegetation, and that has taken some time. In terms of our leadership role, Council's overarching strategic document is our community plan, and that sets out a 20-year planning horizon for our city. Under that, we have a number of issue-specific strategies. In 1998, we launched a climate change strategy that picked up on the need to understand better the likely impacts of climate change on flora and fauna within our city. This theme was carried through into the native vegetation strategy, which was launched last year. Again, the focus is primarily on the land that we manage, but it is a broader citywide focus. In terms of the management priorities, look, it follows the established hierarchy. So the emphasis is on protecting those areas of good quality remnant native vegetation before you start moving into some of the more degraded habitats, and then habitat reconstruction. In the strategy, I guess, over time we've become more sophisticated in our approach, and we've certainly tried to align the way we frame the strategy with the, I guess, the biodiversity planning that's being done at the state government level. In the strategy, and I should say this is available from our website, there's specific reference to the need to tackle the issue of climate change, and I guess it's coming at it from two directions. Understanding how our flora and fauna will adapt and what we need to do as local land managers, and also looking at opportunities for the potentials to achieve biodiversity outcomes out of carbon sequestration. In relation to the former, so understanding what the impacts will be on flora and fauna within the city of Onkaparinga and what our role is in terms of managing that, we've partnered with the University of Adelaide, so we're co-funding some of the work that, that Barry Brooks talked about earlier. So that project's underway. I guess already there's been some issues, as you'd expect, in terms of the University of Adelaide being able to use our data in terms of the format and the way it's been collected. And from us, from our point of view, I guess there's issues around timeframes. Another important issue for local government has been, well, certainly for Onkaparinga and I think across the local government sector more broadly, has been the issue of capability and resources. Councils have a strong, long-established role in horticulture, but they don't until recently in native vegetation and conservation management. Look, unfortunately, there aren't many good native vegetation outcomes that can be achieved via use of a ride-on mower. It's unfortunate, and we've tried, but essentially we need specialist expertise in managing areas of remnant native vegetation. Look, in recognition of this, about 10 years ago, we established an advisory service. So essentially we had botanists available on call for field staff and planners, so whenever there was an issue, they could just get on the phone and have someone come out and discuss the issue. At that stage, that was set up because we just didn't have those resources in-house. We do now have those skills and knowledge in-house. We've continued with the service, but the focus is, and it's used around primarily reactive issues, and it's effectively now freeing up resources so that in-house staff can, you know, focus on bigger picture, more strategic issues. In terms of in-house resources for on-ground works, as I said, staff, parks and reserve maintenance doesn't equate to native vegetation management. We've recently established an in-house native vegetation management team that's able to do on-ground works. We weren't the first council to do that. I think Burnside, going back 5 years or so, really led the way in terms of establishing an in-house team. Certainly, the majority of work is still contracted out, but establishing an in-house team has... certainly, there's cost savings associated with that. There's an educational benefit across the organisation, and it does provide us with greater flexibility. We've been going through a process over the last 15 years of mapping areas of remnant native vegetation under care and control, and developing management plans for those areas. Initially, the focus was on essentially doing a survey that would come up with a species list, and then a management plan that was a list of actions. These would generally be hard copy documents that would only sit with the person responsible for implementing those. So it wasn't, this information wasn't really accessible to other parts of the organisation, and we had difficulty extracting information from that. For example, if we wanted to know how many hectares of a particular vegetation association we were managing, we weren't easily able to extract that from individual surveys and management plans. So we've just gone through a major process of mapping, remapping areas of remnant native vegetation under our care and control, and trying to put that into a GIS layer. This is the information, I guess one of the applications that we've come up with. So essentially we've mapped vegetation associations, the pre-European associations where there's differences, identified where we're doing works, and that's available on the GIS layer. So we've tried to, wherever possible, use consistent fit in with state government methodologies, certainly around the vegetation association types we've used, but we just weren't able to use the, I guess, the quadrant methodology for gathering that data. That's just not practical. So unashamedly, this what suits our purposes. Look, we certainly think that this is leading edge in terms of what councils are doing in terms of mapping areas of remnant native vegetation under their care and control. Just to finish up, I'll touch on what I think the challenges are for local government in relation to biodiversity conservation and climate change. We need information to be able to assist the on-ground management of native vegetation. Certainly we understand, we've got access to regional models, statewide models about what the results of climate change might be, but the challenge is being able to translate that into information that's usable by the on-ground managers. So that's about making sure that the information comes down to the local government level. At the same token, I guess there's obviously challenges around making sure that the data and the information that we're collecting is able to feed back up into regional and statewide planning. There's obviously challenges for us around scale. Local government, we're focused on local issues, so it's about being able to take a broader landscape approach and being able to take a view over a longer time frame. While we've certainly upskilled and got additional skills and resources within the organisation, that's an ongoing process, and that needs to be picked up further. I guess one issue that probably highlights some of these challenges has been the issue of fire. Obviously, the effects of bushfire are likely to become more pronounced, or the risk as a result of changing climate. Certainly since the Victorian bushfires, the political landscape's just changed significantly in terms of bushfire management and biodiversity conservation. We've seen significant political pressure, local community concern, and there's been a lot of pressure on land managers, us as a land manager. And we really, it's highlighted the fact that we need to be able to make evidence-based decisions, and we need to be able to justify and document those decisions around that. So that is both creating, I guess, challenges, but also opportunities to get that process right.